Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Okay, so imagine this for a second. You've got someone who can, like, absolutely kill it on stage doing stand-up, make you laugh till you cry. But then, the next minute, they're writing, you know, award-winning stuff for a huge TV show.
Right. Totally different skill.
And then maybe they pop up acting in a show you love, like a sitcom.
Yeah, you see them on screen.
And on top of all that, they're maybe stirring things up online, causing a bit of a frenzy.
Sometimes all at once.
Exactly. It's like, wow. That's not just, you know, being talented. That's like being a an architect of modern comedy, someone who really gets the whole landscape.
It really is quite something, isn't it? To just jump between all those roles, writer, performer, producer, online personality.
Yeah.
To not just dabble, but actually be good at all of them. I mean, that says a lot about, well, talent, obviously, but also serious skill, right? And maybe a bit of nerve, too.
Oh, definitely some nerve. So today, that's what we're diving into. We're doing a deep dive into the world of Joseph Mondé.
Joe Mondé, yeah.
He was born March 16th, 1983. So that makes him, what, 42 now?
Sounds about right.
An American comedian, actor, screenwriter.
Yeah. And
the definition of multi-hyphenate.
He really is. He's not just sort of participating. He feels like he's actively shaping things in stand-up, TV, the internet.
Yeah, like a real influence.
And what's really striking, I think, is he leaves a mark. You know, it's not just ticking boxes. His career path, it's like a case study in how comedy talent works now, how you navigate everything.
Totally. And for our journey today, our main guide is his Wikipedia entry, which honestly is surprisingly detailed.
Yeah. Sometimes it can be a bit thin.
No. This was pretty comprehensive. It lays out the whole breadth of his career, professional stuff, even a bit of personal background. It's got dates, awards, projects. Gives us a really solid base to work from.
That's great. And, you know, for someone with a career that jumps around as much as his does, having a well-put-together source like that is, well, it's super helpful.
Right.
It lets you trace how things connect, you know?
Yeah.
See the progression from, like, one thing to the next, like a roadmap for his whole evolution.
Exactly. So our mission today, basically, is to unpack all these layers of Joe Mondé's career. Not just list his credits, but really explore how he went from, say, being known as this kind of internet provocateur to becoming an Emmy-winning producer. We want to trace that path from Albuquerque, New Mexico, all the way to the top of the comedy game.
And maybe try to understand some of those weirder terms, right? The controversial stuff, the public persona.
Yeah, definitely want to get into that too, because it feels like it's all connected.
It usually is. And hopefully, you know, for you listening, this gives some insight, not just into Mondé, but into how comedy works today, how you build a career like that, the business side of being creative in Hollywood.
For sure. So we'll highlight the different roles in front of the camera, behind it. We'll definitely unpack the awards because, spoiler, there are quite a few. And yeah, we'll dig into that unique, sometimes, let's say, challenging relationship he had with platforms like Twitter.
Right.
And you'll see how maybe his early life, his education, kind of set the stage for this really distinct comedic voice he developed. So, yeah, let's dig in.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, starting at the beginning, early foundations. So Joseph Mondé, born in Albuquerque, New Mexico, March 16th, 1983.
But the thing that jumps out immediately is his parents.
Yeah.
His dad, Louis Mondé, was a lawyer. His mom, Deborah Mondé, was a judge.
Wow. Okay. A lawyer and a judge. That's intense.
Right. It's such a specific, like, logic-driven household environment, you'd imagine. How do you think growing up with that might have shaped him comedically speaking.
Well, it's hard not to speculate, isn't it? I mean, you'd guess it fosters a certain kind of critical thinking, like razor sharp.
Mm-hmm.
Lawyers and judges, they're all about analyzing things, right? Observing people, dissecting arguments, understanding behavior, often in like high-stakes situations.
Totally. It's not just noticing things, it's breaking them down. Exactly. It's like forensic observation, looking at facts, logic, persuasion. Maybe for Manday, that meant he didn't just see something funny, he could build a case for why it was funny. Or ridiculous. Like a comedy prosecutor.
A comedy prosecutor. I like that. So, yeah, less just ha-ha and more like, here's the systematic reason this is absurd.
It could be.
That kind of fits with some of his more, you know, biting satire, where he really takes something apart. I mean, think about it. Parents constantly weighing evidence, questioning motives.
Yeah.
It's got to give you a sense of irony, right?
Yeah.
Maybe a willingness to question things, challenge norms, maybe even get comfortable with, like, intellectual sparring.
Definitely. Those are all key tools for a comedian, especially one who wants to do more than just tell jokes. It's about having a perspective, making an argument through humor.
Right.
And you see that, I think, in his comedy, especially maybe the early online stuff and his stand-up, too. It's that sharp dissecting quality, not just saying this is funny, but understanding why, the mechanics behind it, the social weirdness, that analytical thing, wanting to take things apart and put them back together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could totally see that coming from a household where logic and understanding human flaws were just like everyday stuff.
Maybe even explains why he was okay with controversy later. Like, he was used to arguments.
Possibly. Used to scrutiny, maybe. Having your ideas tested.
Makes sense. And then, another piece. At age 10, he moves from Albuquerque to St. Paul, Minnesota. Seems like a small detail, but moving during those formative years.
Yeah, that can have an impact.
Right. Maybe makes you more adaptable. Or gives you that kind of outsider's view. Makes you better at reading new situations.
It definitely can. It forces you to, like, observe more keenly, right?
Yeah.
Figure out the new rules, new social dynamics. You become a quicker study.
Which is gold for a comedian.
Pure gold. That constant recalibration. It hones your awareness of different little cultural things, different ways people act. Adds to that well-rounded perspective he seems to have.
Okay, so that's the upbringing. Then education. He graduated from Central High School in 2001. Then he goes to Emerson College in Boston. And gets a BFA in writing.
Emerson, yeah. That's a big deal for creative writing, especially comedy adjacent stuff.
Exactly. A BFA in writing isn't just like a general arts degree. It's specific. It's focused training.
Totally. It signifies a deep dive into like the mechanics of storytelling. It's not just about being naturally funny, which he clearly is.
Right.
It's about understanding joke structure, character arcs, narrative beats, how to build comedy scene by scene, you know, the craft.
The actual nuts and bolts.
Yeah. Skills that are crucial whether you're doing 5 minutes of stand-up where every single word matters, or you're in a writer's room breaking a whole season of TV. It's formal training in making people laugh, but also making them think.
So how do you think that specific training, that BFA, really helped him? Like with stand-up bits versus a TV writer's room, what skills really paid off?
Well, for stand-up, it's about things like pacing, the rhythm of language, how to build a cohesive set that feels like more than just random jokes, setup, punchline, tags.
Structure.
Structure, exactly. And how to edit yourself, be ruthless. A writing program teaches that. Then in a writer's room, those skills are directly applicable. Breaking stories, developing characters with distinct voices, collaborating on scripts.
Right, the teamwork aspect.
Yeah. It means he probably walked into those rooms with more than just funny ideas. He had a toolkit, you know, for actually constructing comedy narratives, ensuring quality, made him valuable right away, I'd imagine. He knew how to apply rigor to funny.
I can totally see that. That foundation, the family background, the formal writing education,
It
really sets a strong base.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's got this foundation. Now, this is where it gets really fun. How he starts making a name for himself. The rise of the digital comedian and stand-up star.
Uh-huh.
And the first big splash, maybe the thing that put him on the map initially, was that website. Look at this fucking hipster.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Classic.
Right. Created April 2009.
Yeah.
And the origin story is just perfect comedy in itself. Apparently, he started it just to help his dad figure out who was or wasn't a hipster.
That's brilliant. So relatable. Like, every parent at that time was probably asking that question.
Totally. And the whole hipster thing was just peaking then, right? Around 2009.
Oh, yeah. Peak hipster. Manday just tapped right into that cultural moment, that shared feeling of, like, amusement, maybe confusion, maybe slight irritation.
All of the above.
Yeah. It showed that sharp observational humor he has, his eye for a trend, his grasp of the zeitgeist really early on. He saw a thing, and he just nailed it with humor.
And it wasn't just a small thing, it blew up. It became this like cultural touch point. People sending in photos, debating.
Everyone was talking about it.
Yeah. And it had legs too. Mm. Got turned into a book, same title, look at this fucking hipster. That's more than just a viral joke. That's seeing a cultural moment and like capitalizing on it. Almost like being a pop culture anthropologist, but funny.
Totally. And it shows his entrepreneurial side too, right? This was before every comedian had to be a social media mogul.
Right, before it was a standard playbook.
Exactly. He just instinctively got how to use digital platforms to create something properly viral. He understood audience engagement, how things spread online.
That experience, watching something just explode like that.
Yeah.
Do you think it taught him stuff about what works online?
Mm-hmm.
What gets attention, maybe even what provokes people, that influenced his later Twitter stuff?
Oh, I think it absolutely had to. He learned firsthand about online dynamics, how fast things move, how even silly stuff can spark huge conversations, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
That early success probably gave him confidence, showed him he could tap into that collective vibe, you know, and how to use the mechanics of sharing online. It was like getting a blueprint for making noise online, a blueprint he definitely used later, maybe more aggressively.
Yeah, maybe weaponized it a bit sometimes.
You could say that. He understood the game.
Okay, so he's got this digital thing happening. But at the same time, he's building a more traditional stand-up career. He released a comedy album, Bitch Face, March 14th, 2014.
Bitch Face, right.
And this wasn't just like a standard stand-up album. It was described as this unique mixtape style. Mm. It had voicemail messages woven in from this wild list of celebrities.
Yeah, that was such a cool concept. Who was on it again?
Okay, get this. Fabulous.
The rapper. Okay.
Roy Hibbert, the NBA player.
Wow.
Jenny Slate, Nick Kroll, Aziz Ansari, fellow comedians.
Yeah.
But then also the RZA from Wu-Tang Clan.
The RZA, no way.
And Amy Poehler. It's just such a mix.
That is seriously eclectic. And it says so much, doesn't it, about his sensibility, his network.
Not just comedians.
No. Rappers, athletes, comedy heavyweights. It shows his connections across different parts of pop culture and his ability to pull all those different threads together into something original.
It really felt like a statement. Like, I'm not just in the comedy box.
Totally. And it speaks to his reputation, too, right? That people like the RZA and Amy Poehler are willing to, like, leave a voicemail for his album. That's respect.
What do you think the point of the voicemails was, comedically?
Well, multiple things, probably. One, it adds this kind of meta layer, right? Blurs the line between the performance and his actual life, his connections, makes it feel more personal, like you're getting a peek behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm. Intimate.
Yeah. And two, it creates these unexpected, funny moments, like the sheer randomness of hearing Fabulous next to, say, Jenny Slate, it's inherently amusing.
The juxtaposition, yeah.
Exactly. And it reinforces that idea that he's tapped into this diverse, interesting world, which kind of mirrors the range of his own comedy.
Okay, so the mixtape album was unique. Then, fast forward a few years, 2017, he gets a Netflix special. Joe Mamande's award-winning comedy special.
Ah, yes, the award-winning special, which is a joke in itself, the title.
Right. But getting a Netflix special, especially back then, that was huge for a comedian.
Oh, absolutely massive. That was the period when Netflix specials were really becoming the thing, the gold standard.
Yeah, seemed like everyone wanted one.
It gave you a global platform, instantly cemented your status way beyond just playing clubs or doing late night spots.
And he'd done those smaller TV spots already, right? Like the half hour on Comedy Central, best week ever, Conan.
Exactly. So the Netflix special was the clear next step up. It showed he could hold an hour, that his stand-up had reached that next level, definitely marked his arrival as a major voice in stand-up comedy.
Okay, so he's conquering digital, conquering stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
But like we said, he's this multi-hyphenate. And his behind-the-scenes work as a writer or producer is arguably where he's made his biggest mark.
Yeah, that's where his versatility really shines.
Let's talk Parks and Recreation. Iconic show. He was a writer for the last three seasons.
Right, seasons 5, 6, and 7. Crucial years for that show.
And not just writing, he also acted in it. 7 episodes is Morris Lurpus.
Morris, yeah, the weird Pawnee resident. Hilarious.
So that period, doing both writing and acting on a show like Parks and Rec, what does that tell you?
It tells you he's got this, like, holistic understanding of comedy, right? He can operate effectively in the writer's room, crafting the jokes, the stories.
Uh-huh.
But he can also step in front of the camera and deliver lines, understand performance, timing, how things actually land on set. That's a pretty rare combo, especially on a show that good.
And that dual perspective must be so valuable. Like, as a writer, you know what it feels like to perform the lines. As an actor, you understand the writer's intent, maybe more deeply.
Totally. It creates this feedback loop. He'd know firsthand how a line he wrote might play out physically, or how an actor's choice could influence the writing. Especially on Parks, known for that amazing ensemble and sharp writing.
Yeah, such a high bar.
Being immersed in that environment, working with people like Mike Schur, Amy Poehler, the whole cast and crew, that's like getting a PhD in TV comedy. It had to sharpen his skills immensely.
And you see Morris Lurpus, this kind of bizarre, tangential character. Mande writing and playing him gives him this intimate control over how that specific brand of weirdness lands.
Exactly. It was probably a crucial launching pad for everything that came next in his writing and producing career.
And came next, is putting it mildly. His credits just explode after that. And across such different types of shows, he worked for Kroll Show on Comedy Central.
Which is pure sketch, character-driven, often really absurd.
Right. And also delocated on Adult Swim.
Which is something else entirely. That weird deadpan witness protection program, mockumentary thing, animated, sort of.
So different.
Yeah.
Going from the warmth of Parks to the absurdity of Kroll to the...
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Like, unsettling vibe of delocated.
It really hammers home his adaptability. He's not just doing one kind of comedy. He can clearly write for optimistic satire, character sketches, surreal animation. He gets different comedic languages. That's impressive range.
And it doesn't stop. He was a producer on the first season of Aziz Ansari's Master of None on Netflix.
Highly acclaimed show. Slice of life, more grounded humor.
And he wrote an episode, The Other Man. Then, a huge role on The Good Place.
Yeah.
Writer and producer.
Another Mike Schur masterpiece. Philosophical comedy, super smart, intricate plotting.
And he voiced a character too, Todrick Kemple.
Todrick, right. Maximum Derek.
Huh. And then Forever on Amazon Prime Video with Fred Armisen and Maya Rudolph. Executive producer on 8 episodes, wrote one called The Lake House.
Another show playing with genre, relationships, kind of existential themes.
It's just, the range is staggering. Parks,
yep.
Kroll, Delocated, Master of None, Good Place, Forever, all critically respected, all very different.
And notice the progression, too, from writer on Parks to producer on Master of None, writer-producer on Good Place, then executive producer on Forever.
Yeah, more responsibility.
Exactly. He's not just writing jokes anymore. He's shaping the shows, mm-hmm. overseeing things, managing creative teams, moving from contributing talent to leadership. That ability to jump between such different styles and take on bigger roles, that's elite versatility.
He's clearly become this go-to creative force who can handle different tones and lead projects. Which brings us to, arguably, the absolute peak so far. Hacks.
Ah, Hacks. What a show.
He was co-executive producer, sometimes consulting producer, for the Max series from 2021 to 2024. Wrote multiple episodes.
Key creative force behind the scenes.
And, once again, not just behind the scenes. He was in the main cast for the first two seasons as Ray.
Ray, the agent's assistant, yeah. Again, doing both.
That deep involvement writing, producing, acting on a show as successful and acclaimed as Hacks.
Yeah.
What does that signify?
It signifies he's integral, right? He's woven into the fabric of that show's success. As co-EP, he's helping shape the big picture, the season arcs, the tone. As writer, he's crafting those specific, brilliant scenes. As an actor, he's living inside the world he's helping create.
That must give him such a unique perspective on it all.
Immense. He can see how a line reads on the page, how it feels to say it, how it lands in the edit. It helps ensure that unique Hacks blend of sharp comedy and real emotion translates perfectly. His fingerprints are all over why that show works so well.
And the industry certainly agrees. The awards for Hacks are where things really hit another level for him.
Yeah, the recognition is huge.
He got a Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Comedy Series.
The big one.
At the 76 Emmys. plus a Producers Guild of America award and multiple Writers Guild of America awards specifically for Hacks. It's like the trifecta.
It absolutely is the trifecta. Winning the Emmy for Best Comedy, the PGA for Best Produced Comedy Episode, and WGA Awards for Best Writing. That's hitting every major mark.
What does that mean, getting all those top awards for the same show?
It means the entire industry, actors, producers, writers, recognizes the excellence of the show and his contribution to it at every level. It cements his status not just as a great writer, but as a leader who can help steer a top-tier production. It says he's truly elite. His involvement guarantees a certain level of quality now.
Okay, so the behind-the-scenes stuff is clearly stellar award-winning. But let's pivot back to his on-screen work, because he's built up a really interesting acting footprint, too.
Yeah, he pops up quite a bit.
We mentioned Morris in Parks and Rec, but he also had a pretty significant recurring role on Modern Family. Played Ben in 12 episodes between 2015 and 2018.
Modern Family, another huge network hit. Being a recurring guest on shows like that, Parks and Modern Family, it shows he's got that reliable comedic presence, right?
Yeah.
He often plays that slightly awkward, deadpan, maybe a little off-kilter character. It's a specific flavor he brings that works really well in those big ensembles. He's good at being the memorable oddball.
The guy you remember, even if he's only in a few scenes.
Exactly. Cool. And then, like we said, Rayon Hacks, main cast for 2 seasons, being a main cast member while also being a co-EP and writer. That's juggling a lot.
Seriously. What does that tell you about his commitment or his skill set?
It tells you he's incredibly comfortable moving between those roles, maybe even sees them as feeding each other. Playing Ray, he gets to embody the world he's writing, which must give him deeper insights. It's like live R&D for the show's comedy and character dynamics. Mm-hmm. He lived and breathed Hacks.
Beyond the live action sitcoms, he does a lot of voice acting too, which is a whole different talent.
Totally different skill set, yeah.
Yeah, he was Todrick Hempel in The Good Place and the spinoff The Selection. Voiced Branch in Animals. And maybe my favorite, he voiced Mark Zuckerberg in our cartoon President.
Zuckerberg, yeah. That's great casting.
It really shows his range, right?
Uh-huh.
Todrick is so specific, kind of bureaucratic yet chaotic. Zuckerberg is pure satire. Animals was its own weird thing.
It absolutely shows vocal versatility. Voice acting is all about conveying character just through sound tone, inflection, pacing. You have no facial expressions or body language to rely on. So being able to create these distinct characters from Hempel to Zuck, just with his voice, it highlights his control and his comedic instincts in yet another medium. He gets how sound alone can be funny.
And he's still acting. He's got upcoming stuff listed, like Dr. Haber in Running Point in 2025,
yeah,
and appearings as himself in Everybody's Live with John Mulaney.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So yeah, his acting career is definitely ongoing, keeps putting him in interesting projects, whether it's scripted roles or appearing as himself with someone like Mulaney. It shows he's still very much in demand on screen. People like his specific vibe.
He's also had a couple of film roles, smaller parts, but in pretty big comedies. Played Joe in The Interview back in 2014.
The Rogen Goldberg movie, yeah.
Controversial one.
And he was Todd in The Disaster Artist in 2017, directed by James Franco.
Right. So again, maybe not huge roles, but being movies by those guys, Rogen, Goldberg, Franco, it signals something, doesn't it?
Like what? Like he's recognized within that core group of major comedy players. He's part of that scene, connected. They trust him to come in, even for a smaller part, and add something funny, something distinctive. It's like a stamp of approval from the film comedy world. Broadens his reach.
Okay, so we've got this picture. Critically acclaimed writer, producer, Emmy winner, solid stand-up, recognizable actor in TV and film, an incredibly impressive, well-rounded career.
Yeah, really hitting on all cylinders.
But then, there's the other side. The public persona. Specifically, his time on Twitter, which was memorable.
Memorable is one word for it. Unfiltered might be another.
Definitely unfiltered. Before he quit, he was pretty well known for essentially trolling famous people and companies online.
Yeah, that was kind of his thing for a while. Provocation as performance art, almost.
And he even openly said he bought a lot of his followers, which is just a weirdly honest or maybe meta-comedic thing for someone in the public eye to admit.
It really is. And it kind of plays into that whole persona, right? Like, commenting on the absurdity of social media fame itself, even while participating in it, buying followers and then telling people you bought them. It undermines the whole currency of follower counts. It's like performance art critiquing the platform from within.
It felt like he understood the game, how to get attention, how to go viral, and just decided to play it by his own weird rules. Sometimes using it for comedy, sometimes Well, sometimes it got messy.
Definitely got messy sometimes.
Like the lacrosse saga. That was legendary. He just relentlessly tweeted about wanting to be their spokesperson.
Obsessively.
Until they actually sent him a cease and desist letter.
Which is kind of the ultimate punchline to the bit, isn't it? It's this perfect example of his style. Taking a silly premise, committing to it with relentless, absurd persistence, and pushing it until it breaks into the real world, forcing a reaction from this big corporation.
It felt like performance art crossing into reality. A comment on branding, fandom, maybe just pure annoyance tactics for laughs.
Yeah, all of the above. A unique blend of humor and maybe deliberately ignoring corporate boundaries just to see what happens.
And he wasn't afraid of direct conflict either. Back in 2011, he apparently started a public argument with the NBA player Gilbert Arenas.
Oh, right. Over Arenas supposedly deleting a bunch of old sexist tweets.
Yeah, that's not just trolling. That's picking a fight on, like, ethical grounds.
It shows his online persona wasn't just about random jokes or pranks. He was willing to use his platform to call people out, engage in more serious, confrontational debates. It shifted him from just funny internet guy to someone potentially using humor or just his platform for social commentary or accountability.
But that can be a tricky line to walk.
Extremely tricky. Especially online where tone gets lost.
Which leads to maybe the most controversial incident. 2017, that tweet about Barron Trump.
Oof. Yeah, that one caused a huge backlash.
He tweeted, Barron Trump will be mutilating cats on the White House lawn in like 2 weeks and faced massive accusations of cyberbullying, abusing his platform.
It absolutely crossed a line for a lot of people, targeting a minor, even satirically, even the president's son. It hit a nerve.
What do you think the intent was there? Just boundary pushing gone wrong?
Probably. Maybe intended as dark satire about the political climate, the perceived chaos.
Yeah.
But it landed really badly. It starkly showed the power and the danger of that kind of provocative online persona. It demonstrated how easily intent can be misread or just deemed unacceptable, especially when dealing with sensitive subjects like kids. It probably contributed to this idea that his online self could be genuinely reckless, not just playful.
Yeah, like a clear example of how a tweet can blow up and have real consequences for your image.
Definitely. The fallout was significant.
So, given all that history, the trolling, the controversy, the backlash, maybe it's not entirely surprising that he eventually just quit Twitter.
Right. He posted that note saying he was done with it.
And his reason was pretty blunt. He called the platform a fucking hellscape.
Which, honestly, probably resonated with a lot of people, even then. His decision to leave and to label it so harshly felt like a statement about the platform itself. About the pressure, the toxicity, the mental toll of living publicly online, especially when you're constantly poking the bear.
It's like even the provocateur reached his limit.
Exactly. It suggested that maybe the game wasn't fun anymore or the cost was too high. It was a powerful commentary on the state of social media from someone who had really lived in the trenches.
So he steps away from the hellscape.
Eh?
Does that hurt his career? Seems like not at all. If anything, maybe refocusing helped. Because the awards and recognition just kept coming, especially for his actual creative work.
I think you're right. Maybe stepping away from the noise allowed his actual talent, the writing and producing, to really take center stage without the distraction or the negative baggage of the Twitter persona.
Let the work speak for itself.
Yeah. He could control the narrative again by focusing on the shows, and the industry clearly responded to the quality of that work. In the long run, leaving that hellscape probably boosted his standing and respect within the industry. The spotlight shifted back to the craft.
And that craft has been seriously decorated. Let's recap those accolades, because they really do tell a story of consistent excellence. We mentioned the Emmy nominations for both The Good Place and Hacks.
Multiple nominations for Outstanding Comedy Series for both shows. That alone is impressive consistency.
Being part of teams making shows, considered among the very best year after year.
It shows you're operating at the highest level.
And then the huge win, the Primetime Emmy for Outstanding Comedy Series for Hacks Season 3 in 2024.
That's the peak, the ultimate validation in TV comedy. For him, as a co-EP and writer, it confirms his integral role in creating the best comedy show on television, according to the Academy. It's a massive statement about his impact.
Then there's the Producers Guild recognition. Nominations for The Good Place and Hacks Seasons 1 and 2. And then the W win for PGA's Best Episodic Comedy for Hacks Season 3 in 2024.
And the PGA is crucial because it's producers recognizing producers. It honors the leadership, the management, the vision needed to actually get a great show made. Winning that and the Emmy for the same season, That signals mastery of both the creative and the practical sides of production.
And finally, the Writers Guild Awards. His peers, the writers, nominations going way back to Parks and Recreation in 2012-2013. Then The Good Place in 2018, Hacks Season 2 in 2022.
Shows longevity and respect from writers over time.
But then the WINS for Hacks. 2 wins for Season 1 back in 2021 for new series and comedy series. That's huge for a first season.
Incredible. Winning both categories right out of the gate. That's the Guild saying the writing on this show from the very beginning was exceptional, and he was a key part of that.
And then another WGA win for comedy series for Hacks Season 3 in 2024.
Just reinforces the sustained quality of the writing and his contribution to it. These WGA wins are arguably the most direct validation of his core craft as a writer.
So putting it all together, the Emmy, the PGA, the multiple WGAs, especially achieving that trifecta for Hacks, what's the big picture takeaway about Joe Mandy's standing now?
The big picture is that he's unequivocally established himself as a top-tier elite creative force in television comedy. It's not just about one hit show or one skill. It's about consistent, award-winning excellence across writing and producing on multiple high-profile, critically beloved series over more than a decade. These awards, judged by his peers across the industry, cement his legacy as someone central to shaping contemporary TV comedy. His name carries serious weight now. He's a proven leader and a master craftsman.
Really an incredible trajectory. So wrapping up our deep dive today,
yeah,
we've looked at Joe Mandy, this true multi-hyphenate, from that early viral hit, look at this fucking hipster, through his stand-up, his acting, that wild Twitter phase, all the way to being this powerhouse Emmy-winning writer and producer behind a show like Hacks. He really does kind of embody how dynamic and frankly weird the career path of a comedic artist can be in the 21st century.
Absolutely. His journey really mirrors the way the industry itself has changed. You have to be adaptable. You have to understand different platforms, from live performance to TV production to, yes, even navigating the chaos of online engagement. He shows how you can evolve from being a niche internet figure to an industry leader, kind of learning and growing in public.
So here's a final thought to leave everyone with. We've seen Mandy go from this sharp blogger who really got the internet early on to this major award-winning creator of sophisticated TV comedy, while also maintaining this boundary-pushing, unforgettable online persona for years. What does that whole arc tell us about what it takes to be a successful comedic talent now?
That's a great question.
Does it maybe suggest that the most impactful artists today need to be masters of many trades? You know, blurring those lines between being a performer, a writer, a producer, maybe even a provocateur online. Is that multifaceted, multi-platform skill set not just an option anymore, but almost required to reach the highest levels of both critical acclaim and real cultural impact? Makes you wonder if the era of just being a stand-up or a sitcom writer is kind of over for those aiming for the very top. Something to think about.